Welcome to the Sports Equity Podcast. Here we talk to special guests from teams, brands, and agencies to discuss the value that sports brings to business through current trends and best practices with your host, Brett Weisbrot.
Our guest has spent the last 25 years in the sports industry, first playing in the National Hockey League, growing a heavily involvement in giving back, to now growing on the business side as Chief Commercial Officer of the Florida Panthers. Today, we welcome Sean Thornton to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good to have you. Great to have this conversation here today.
Appreciate it, bro.
So for those that don't know, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're from originally?
Yeah, so I'm from Oshawa, Ontario, small town about 45 minutes east of Toronto. Very blue-collar town. Grew up there. My family still lives there. Drafted by the Maple Leafs in 97. Played in their farm system for 4 years out in St. John's, Newfoundland. And then another 6 years in the minors, up and down with Chicago, Anaheim. Got a cup of coffee with Chicago. Cup in Anaheim, went to Boston for 7 years. Those were the glory years, won another cup, and then finished my career here down in Florida and then moved over to the business side. That's the quick snapshot anyways.
That's exciting, right? Well, early on in life, we know that you played hockey, right? You know, going into your late teenage years, but where did you first grow a passion for sports?
Passion for sports, as a child, I mean, like everyone else, you know, your buddies are playing certain sports. For me, it was lacrosse and hockey were my two big ones growing up. Started boxing a little bit when I was 14 or 15, but mostly hockey and lacrosse were the two sports. In Canada, where I'm from, the pocket is very lacrosse focused. Both my cousins played professionally. My one cousin had the full ride to Duke. And it was easy because we mostly played box lacrosse. You just take your hockey equipment, wear your hockey helmet, your hockey gloves, your hockey elbow pads, put on a pair of shorts and running shoes and grab a lacrosse stick and you got to play both sports. Back then, not a lot of kids played hockey year round either. You looked for another sport to play in the off season, which I still believe in because it gives you a mental break and you don't burn out as quickly. But that's my personal opinion on it anyways.
That was the same thing in Jersey growing up, right? Most kids were ice hockey and lacrosse, whether things interchanged or not. You know, lacrosse was definitely outside, but, good times, of course. You know, when did you realize, you know, in your teenage years that you had a chance to play professionally?
It was past my teenage years. I don't think I was just turning 20. I was working in the steel factory and I got the call that I was drafted by the Toronto Maple Leafs and signed my first contract in there, but I had no idea what was going to happen. I mean, my whole life, I was the worst player on every team or, the last person cut. So I never really thought I was going to be making a career out of this. That's for sure. It still surprised me to this day that I made a career out of it.
And what characteristics and background from maybe this time of your life would you say also translate into your work ethic now?
Things that translate over. Leadership, desire to always win. I hate losing, so constantly pushing. I don't sleep well at night if something didn't go the way I wanted it to on the business side, just like it was on the sports side. Work ethic. Listen, there's a lot of things that translate, being able to manage and deal with people, the soft skills that are involved. I think there's a lot to be said for when you grow up in a locker room with 20-ish guys your whole life and learning how to manage different personalities. I think those soft skills really come into play when you get into a leadership position, whether it's in the locker room in the NHL or on the other side, on the business side, managing people as well.
I mean, it's all part of the culture, right? Whether you're on the ice or doing business.
Exactly. It's all about the culture, very relationship driven. And, you know, everyone's motivated by different tactics, right? I mean, my job is to get the most out of the people that I work with daily, and not everyone reacts to the same type of leadership. So you have to adjust. And as you know, some people like a kick in the ass to get them going, and some people want to be told how great of a job they're doing. And sometimes it's a bit of both. And that's no different when you're in the locker room. You know, some guys will run head first through a wall after the coach yells at them. And some people, you know, don't react well to that and kind of fold up and don't give you their best performance. So you really have to, you know the personalities and the people that you're working with daily and read and react and try and get the most out of everyone you're with.
And thinking back to when you were 20 years old, you got drafted by Toronto. How did that feel at the time?
I was actually golfing with my buddies. We were joking on the course that I might have been drafted today. Yeah, right. And then the only reason I found out is we went back to my parents' house. We were going to go out and get something to eat. And the phone rang while I was there after golf. And it was Bill Waters, the then GM of the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I basically told him to beat it. And then my agent had to call back and say, no, that was really Bill Waters that you just hung up on because you thought it was a joke. Being from Toronto was a big deal to be drafted by the Leafs. Unfortunately, I never got to play a real game with them in my 4 years, but I was a Leafs fan by proximity growing up, even though they didn't have the greatest years back then. Just being drafted in general is a huge honor. And the fact that it was my hometown team amplified that.
And that in the normal season, it's gotta be fun playing against them, even on the business side still.
Yes, definitely. Both sides, going back to Toronto, my family would be in the arena and my friends having dinner with them the night before. And yes, on the business side, I usually try and make that trip with the team if we're going to Toronto. It's always exciting to get back home and see what they're doing there.
And who at that early age, right, when you got drafted, you were working your way up through the minors, who had the biggest impact on your career at the time?
I've had a lot of mentors. At a young age, it would have been actually my coach when I was 10, Lionel Ingleton, who ended up being my, I'd almost say life coach. When I turned 14, 15, he's the one I started boxing with. He started training me both physically and mentally to be able to do the job that I had to do on the ice. And I think it's pretty well known that I used to have to take care of my teammates or myself when issues arise. And he really got, because I'm a pretty laid back guy to begin with. So to get me into that mind space, to be able to turn it on when I had to get into an altercation, he was very influential for me earlier in my days. And then every coach I had brought something different. Some instilled work ethics, some instilled a sense of leadership, some, just gave me a sense of worth too, and telling me that I was a little bit better than I thought I was, and gave me some confidence to be able to do things I might not have been able to if I didn't have that support. So I've had a lot of good people along the way. I'm very lucky. My parents, obviously, too, instilling that work ethic, very blue collar. You can go work in the steel factory again for the next 20 years, or you can put the extra work in to try and make yourself successful in whatever you're doing.
And talking about being successful, you mentioned kind of back and forth from Chicago, right, for about a 6-year period before Boston, and you got a chance to win a ring on your way out in Anaheim. How did that help kind of create your identity in the league?
Yeah, it was huge. I mean, Chicago, I was done with Chicago. They basically let me know. Trent Yanni had called Bob Murray, who was the assistant GM in Anaheim, and said, hey, this guy played with me in Chicago, Norfolk. Might be worth taking a look at. They brought me in for a tryout. I didn't make the team. Sent down to Portland, captain there for a few weeks, then got called back up and stayed for the rest of the year. I was a small spoke in the wheel. I got to play, 48 games during the season. Played most of the playoff games. I think I was injured for 2 or 3 and scratched for 1 or 2. But I was out there when we won. I got to put that trophy over my head. And I think people ask me what the feeling's like. It's accumulation of all the work you've ever, all the sacrifices, all the work you've ever put in your whole life. I mean, everything's worth it in those 15 to 30 seconds you have that trophy over your head. It's almost euphoric. It's tough to explain. But I was a 30-year-old rookie, basically, that in my first full year of being able to do that. But I had a lot of sacrifices along the way, especially playing that long in the minors, and a bunch of other things I'm not going to complain about because it all got me to where I am. But it's all worth it in that moment.
What was your biggest takeaway from that?
That you can do it. Anything's possible. I mean, I try and preach that to kids all the time. Like, people are going to tell you you're not good enough. People are going to tell you you can't get there. People are going to tell you, there's a lot of people are going to tell you the things you can't do. But if you really want it and put the work in and dedicate yourself to it, there's always the possibility. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but there's definitely a possibility. And that's what it was like for me.
And then, going into Boston, right, you then had an opportunity to spend your next 7 years in Boston, right? I think this is really where, the Sean Thornton image was built and, really got a chance to make that your home. What was it like, early on or in Boston in general?
I didn't know much about the Bruins. I'd never played them. I didn't know one person on the team. I remember when they signed me, or they were looking to sign me, Cam Neely called and said, Sean, I don't know you, but I know the type of guy you are from what I hear. And this town just really embraces the type of people that that you are, the amount you give back, being able to fight for a living, your hard work and blue collar attitude, you know, really resonates in this town. And that might've been the understatement of my career, to be completely honest. The people there treated me unbelievably well and really took to me. And when I got there, we weren't even selling out the home opener, but us as an organization, players we had, the team we had, we really took the city's identity and embraced it. They want hardworking, hard-nosed. You leave it all out there every night. Even if you don't win, they almost kind of just want to see blood. And we kind of brought that to the table. We got lucky the first year. We played Montreal in the first round, which is the biggest rivalry. We just snuck into the playoffs and ended up playing them and took them to 7 games. And that kind of got the ball rolling for the organization. But we had a lot of lunch pail guys that really understood what the brand needed to be for the organization. A lot of help with Matt Chmura, who's the PR guy, and Peter Shirelli, and really embracing it, you know, the business side back then, embracing what the team identity was and trying to, you know, run in the same path.
That, and then in 2011 there, I remember actually going to the Eastern Conference Finals in Tampa, I think that year. And there was a game where you guys were up 3-0 and Tampa found their way back to win. I mean, there were some gritty series to get through 2011, you know, winning the cup there, you know, and holding it up probably a long time. It had been in Boston at the time. How is that different than your time in Anaheim winning the cup?
Well, we both would have had the same seat probably for that game in Tampa because I was scratched for most of that series. You're right. Really exciting hockey. And then we get to the finals, hard fought series against Vancouver. People ask me all the time, you know, what's the difference between the two cups? And I would say Anaheim was the most exciting. Boston meant more because I was there and part of the leadership team and part of the culture and part of the turning of the tide over the last, 4 or 5 years at that point. So I felt like I was more involved in the whole transition of the organization and the locker room. So it meant more putting the cup over my head, but you know, your whole life playing ball hockey on the street or pond hockey in Canada, you're always dreaming about winning the Stanley Cup. So the first time you do it, pretty exciting, but second one meant more.
And I would think that there's somewhat of a difference in the traditional market like Boston, maybe compared to, you know, Southern Cal, right, with a non-traditional hockey fan.
A little bit. I think, though, when you win, I mean, the Ducks that year were probably the best team in the league. We set a record for, I can't remember how many games straight they won, like 17 or 18 at the start of the season. So there was a lot of hype around the team. But, yes, it's not an original six team. It's not. Boston is arguably the biggest sports town in the world with all the championships they did through those glory years. So, so we had 50,000 people, I think, in my Ducks parade, and we had, you know, 1.5 million, I think, for the Bruins parade. So there's definitely a difference there, but I think more of me is just being part of the core group that helped turn it around there.
Who was the coolest personality you got to meet of the other Boston teams while you were there?
I became friends with a few different guys. Personality wise, David Ortiz, probably. He's a very big and bright individual, a great guy. My wife's become friends with his wife. And I've become pretty close friends with Kevin Euclid, considering one of our, you know, our families are really tight. Kenny Florian, the former UFC fighter, just a great guy. He's kind of one of the reasons I got into jiu-jitsu and have continued to train in that sport, just getting to know him. Gostowski, the kicker for the Pats, great guy, big hockey fan. Found out he's from Tennessee, but originally from Buffalo and like grew up playing hockey and then had to give it up. So, you know, in Boston, it's pretty cool that everyone sort of goes to the same charity events, goes to the same, everyone and all the teams support each other and they're always at each other's games. And it's a pretty tight knit community there amongst the athletes. So I was pretty fortunate to become friends with some pretty good people.
Yeah. And on that note, in 2013, right, you opened up your own foundation to help research and find cures for Parkinson's disease and cancer. You know, how did that all come about?
So I started a golf tournament 2 years prior to that I used to run through the Bruins Foundation. The 2012 lockout, was it? Yeah, 2012 lockout absolutely sucked for a lot of reasons. But the one positive was I wasn't allowed to talk to the Bruins. I didn't want to lose my golf tournament that was in memory of my grandmother. So I started my own foundation because of that and have continued to be able to give back and grow the foundation since then. We chose Parkinson's because of my late grandmother and then pediatric cancer. I was always a player that enjoyed going to hospitals and trying to put a smile on Sick Kids Faces. It started when I was in St. John's, Newfoundland, going into my first ever pro hospital visit and actually seeing the sister of one of my good friends on a ventilator. I had dinner with her a week before, and a week later, I didn't know she was sick. She had cystic fibrosis, and I just hear not. And then it kind of just hit home. Like, this is real. You can make a difference. So it was more for me, for being selfish, than probably them. It made me feel better about when I saw how they would push, you know, they're happy and they're going through a way tougher day than we are. And it just puts a lot of things in perspective for you. So you can't go to a pediatric cancer ward and not be affected by it. I did enough of them to know that, you know, the golf tournament was for my grandmother. And I also wanted to give the other half to pediatric cancer patients.
And then the other thing, while I was doing my research during your Boston era, you know, while you were in Boston, you had an opportunity to appear as a guest anchor on Sticks and Stones, you know, the hockey segment, right?
For Mike Felger, yes. Sportsnet.
You know, how was that experience? What did you kind of take away from being on the other side of the camera?
Yeah, so as I was there, I was always thinking about what my next steps were going to be. So a lot of time I would spend in the Bruins office, actually sitting with different departments after practice and trying to learn as much as I could of the business side. On road trips, I was always on the partnership dinners. I was always talking to, you know, Amy Latimer and Matt Schmer and Chris Johnson, all the people in the Bruins front office that kind of ran the behind the scenes stuff. But I thought, well, if that doesn't work out, what's my other angle? And it could be TV, it could be radio. So I set up a interview with Comcast Sports. They originally brought me on as a guest appearance for a lot of their sports shows. I did once or twice a week, and then that kind of turned into, you know, co-anchoring with Michael Felger on Sticks and Stones sometimes. And that actually did turn into a job opportunity when I retired to go back and work for Ness. And there was an offer to do like a pre show, sort of an armchair quarterback, people calling in saying, why didn't you shoot on the power play? And then I'd tell them they're an idiot in a nice polite way, with some knowledge of the game. So I never enjoyed being in front of the camera, to be completely honest. I don't like to be in front of the camera. I don't like to talk a lot in front of people, but it was a means to an end, and it's fun to do. I just don't like looking at myself. So that's the tough part.
Yeah, right. That's part of the reason why I do this podcast. I have a face for radio.
You said it.
So in 2014, you know, you joined the Florida Panthers, right? You know, to play, I think, a 2-year and then a 1-year contract. So call it 3 years to, you know, finish out a long tenured career, working really hard, making your way through the league. You know, at what point did you have to start, you know, or did you think to plan for your next act off the ice?
Again, I was planning the whole time. I just didn't know what that would be. So there was a really tough, when I say tough, I mean in a good way, after talking to Doug Cifu, Mr. Viola and Matt Caldwell about presenting an offer for me moving over to the business side. At the same time, I had my Nesson offer, an offer for the Bruins, and a partnerships offer to go back to Boston. It's good to have, you know, choices, but really tough. My wife and I always thought we'd be moving back to Boston, but the business side was always my passion. So a couple months of really sitting and thinking about it, and it basically came down to my passion, and I always wanted to have a my wife actually told me, you won't be satisfied not having a vested interest in a team. But just sit back and critique players. You'll be able to do it, but you're not going to be extremely happy about it. Well, I know you'll be passionate about trying to drive, whether it's a marketing effort, revenue, whatever it might be, on whatever you end up doing on the business side. I know you're going to want to crush it because you have a vested interest in a team.
And on that note, can you tell us maybe how your role first started, you know, and maybe the evolution of that?
Yeah. Again, very fortunate that they trusted in me. My first few months, I just sat, listened, went into every meeting I could possibly, gave my player perspective on things because there was no players on the business side. And I, you know, whether it's a marketing effort that might be a little bit too lighthearted after coming off a bad season, you know, I very simple be like, hey guys, I don't think that's the message we should be portraying right now. We should be crushed. We should be angry. We should be coming back into, and given that, anyways, slowly started to get my feet underneath me. And then the 25th anniversary of the organization was coming up. I was put as a point person for that. So got a lot of the different departments to work together, including the logo creation, working with John Viola on that in our creative department. And then, you know, the research and what other teams have been doing, using my contacts in different leagues and really putting together what that whole 25th anniversary program looked like and how to monetize it. After that, tragedy of MSD happened. And I wouldn't say I was the first choice, but I had some experience with the Boston bombings. I had a very strong network with some people like Sarah McKenna at the Red Sox and Sam Kennedy and Matt Shimura at the Bruins and Eric Tosio of Vegas and some people that had gone through the Sandy Hook and the bombings and really just relied on my network to help guide what that looked like. But in that, you know, obviously I'm also the point person for some of the families that we knew that were affected, some of my neighbors. And through that process, you know, having to put together the tribute, having to, you know, everything that went into the MSD kind of ran through me. And then after that, Matt, our CEO, said, you know, you did 25th anniversary, you did, we were a fairly flat organization at that time. So, you know, all these departments that had to work together for those two big efforts for the marketing, game press, PR, foundation, community relations. He said that you're now going to lead them because you seem to be they seem to have good rapport with you. You've had some successes and they seem to respect you. So that's sort of how I started. As I got my promotion to senior vice president, oversaw those, and then gradually have taken on a lot more of a revenue leadership role now with partnerships and then ticket sales and concerts, I think, too.
So interesting. I am a Stoneman Douglas alumni myself. And I have to say that, you know, Roberto Luongo and some of the people that really stepped up in time of need to, whether it was just be there for people or even just have something, a positive thing to celebrate for that matter, right? You know, I think it really took to the community being Broward County's team, to, you know, to have something kind of to rally around and celebrate those lives and the people that meant so much to us, whether you're from Parkland or not.
Yeah, and thank you. I became really good friends with Fred Guttenberg through this. He really helped me shape how this was gonna be formed. And at the end of the day, you know, everybody wanted to do everything, right? Like, and everyone's heart, you know, was like, well, our ownership was like, whatever money you need, whatever we can do to support. And at the end of the day, it was, let's sit back and listen and see what they need, and then we'll give them whatever they need. Yeah, it was, you went to MSD. I live two streets over. I'm still reminded by it every day when I drive by. So wasn't easy. I mean, I lost a lot of sleep, but at the end of the day, the families were out in a suite for the 1 year anniversary when we put the tribute together and built a memorial in the arena. And when I saw them crying with tears of appreciation, it all made it worth it.
So, you know, talking more into your time there, you know, how would you say you've overall enjoyed it so far on the business side?
No, I love it. I actually love it. Every day I'm excited to get up and come to work. We have a great team. There's so much potential here. I don't just mean the team on the ice. Obviously, the team on the ice has turned around in the last year. We've had a remarkable season so far. But all the people that I work with daily are just from top down, from the Viola Seafoods all the way down, just committed to whatever we can do to be the most successful franchise in the NHL and in the area. So a lot of passionate people. We're fairly lean. But with that, we get to move a little bit quicker, a little bit more agile, and very proud of the people that I get to work with daily.
Yeah, and guys like Summy have a chance to grow with you, right, and take on other areas of the business and learn together.
Yeah, that's we take a lot of pride in being able to grow from within. Amanda Sifu's a perfect example. She worked as like an intern in marketing all the way up to now she's our director and overseeing all our marketing efforts after our mutual friend Jenya left. We looked externally to see if there was a need to bring in somebody with more experience from other organizations. And really, when we looked at it, Amanda was the best suited for the position out of all the people we talked to. And being able to have stories like that where people are coming up through and growing, or, you know, sometimes they're leaving to go to other organizations, but we know when they're going out the door, we've trained them well, they've gotten experience, and they're getting bigger roles in other organizations. That's just as proud of a moment for us.
And knowing what you know now, is there anything you would have done differently when you got started?
I thought about this one. I don't want to sound arrogant in saying this, but probably not. I had some great mentors, some great advice. I mean, when I moved on to this side, Luke Robitaille, Cam Neely, Sam Kennedy, Sarah McKenna, all these people that I reached out to or reached out to me, Larry Lucchino, they all gave me great advice. And even Gary Bettman, when I sat in his office, probably a month after I retired and was looking to do this, they all gave me great advice, and it didn't go in one ear and out the other. I really took it to heart, and I sat here and I listened for the first 3-4 months, gave my perspective when asked upon, but I mean, really, I'm still learning. I'm still adapting. I'm still trying to innovate. I'm still trying to adjust. I feel like I've had a fairly successful ascent to my position now from really just listening and reacting when need to.
It's funny because if I go backwards to my early days in the NHL, I think about how I could potentially have been a better listener, right? Being the ticket salesperson versus now being more of a partnership person, you have to listen. You could lose the meat of the entire conversation by not listening to what the other person has to say.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to be fairly reflective too. And I try not to make snap decisions. I'm always stepping back and trying to look at the big picture instead of the what's right in front of me. And seeing what's best for the organization on a macro level and potentially a month, a year, 3 years down the road and how this small decision could affect where we end up years down the road. And I don't want to be the one responsible for making that bad decision if it is one. So I really try and think it through before I pull the trigger.
And what areas on the revenue side have helped you create new opportunities?
I think right now, the most exciting thing we have going on that part is probably our new practice facility that we're developing downtown in Holiday Park with the live music venue. There's a lot of opportunity. We're talking to a lot of people on what that space looks like. I think, you know, there's a lot of cool, innovative things out there that we haven't even tapped into yet. You see the crypto space. I mean, the NHL hasn't made a decision on which way they're going there, but you look at crypto, you look at the healthcare, you look at the innovation of technology in these arenas and these music venues. I think there's a lot of exciting things that are happening where player puck tracking is going with sports betting, with being able to have all this data at your fingertips in real time. And how do you leverage and monetize all these different data points? I think is really exciting. How far we've come in the last 4 years since I just got on this business side to where we're going to be in the next 4 or 5 years is, I think it's amazing to think about. And I'm really excited for it.
And what's a good example of how your team's been creative in this environment over the last 12 months?
Creative in the environment. I'm always trying to push the boundaries. I think small thing would be creating the first virtual 5K in all of pro sports back in April. Literally just sitting in my backyard one day, called John Colombo on our foundation side and Addy on our PR side and Amanda on our marketing side and said, crazy idea. Do you think we usually have a 5K? Like, do you think we can do it virtually? It's the only thing I can think of right now that, and as a group, like, yeah, I think so. Anyways, small thing, but you're proud that the Panthers did it first and we had other teams following suit afterwards and calling us. I'd say Panthers on Cage, we created our first behind the scenes all access show. This has been a passion project of mine since I got to the Panthers. We coming from Boston and being part of the player side of Behind the B and seeing how that grows with one of my best friends, the developer of that show, being able to do that and really giving people a taste of, I think we're the first to show players actually testing and how that went through when we were going back into the bubble situation, back into playoffs and the prep work that went into it and some of the protocols and the rules around how these guys were going on the ice 4 at a time for 1 week. And then 2 weeks later, 12, and the next week's full teams practicing, but they're testing twice a day. And I think being able to, you know, show what that looks like in trying times was a remarkable feat by our team, being able to set it up and do it safely and be able to showcase it to the fan base.
That, and I think looking behind the scenes at, you know, the hockey ops aspect of that, it gave you an opportunity to partner with someone like Enterprise, who's one of the largest in operations in the automotive field.
Yeah, we had the first season with Lexus in the offseason. We don't want to get into the contractual situation, but we had a chance to pivot and we thought Enterprise made the most sense. We got on a call with them. We pitched the idea that we had already had success on, showed them some metrics, and they said, wow, we love this. This is exactly the type of thing we want to be attached to. And, you know, do small things like product integration throughout the episodes. And there's actually a need because we had 50 players coming into town and a lot of them needed rental cars too. So you could actually show them using the product, which, you know, it's not just a logo slap at that point. You're actually having some real integration, which they like.
Yeah, it never hurts for a sports organization to have some extra cars lying around.
Exactly. We actually used the, you've been here, our lots at the BBT are huge. When the pandemic hit, they had a lot of cars in overflow, nobody was renting cars. So we actually, on top of that, used our lots to house their cars from Enterprise too, to be able to help out.
I remember the old days when Kia would use the lot as ancillary parking.
Yeah, I wasn't here for those days, I don't think. But
good times. So, you know, we spoke a little bit earlier about giving back to charity and, you know, you creating your own foundation. But how has your background in doing so kind of helped grow the foundation at the Panthers? And what's the key focus there?
Yeah, you know, we're very lucky that this is a huge focus of the Biolas and the Sifus. And, you know, we have our four pillars, which everyone can look up. But my personal foundation experience translates over a little bit, but I mean, I have my passion projects. The team is, we have a more, I guess, a broader look at things, and it's more community-based, whereas mine's more giving back to sick individuals. So the Violas are very community-based. Everything we do is community first. I'm sure it was the same when you were here with this organization. We have to be in the community to be relevant. It's a, we're more of an event town than a sports town. And to connect to the community, you have to be really in it. So our foundation, we've had territory teammates this year where we've brought out frontline workers for every game and honored them in the BB&T now Truist Suite, thanking them for their sacrifice over these last 12 months. We do a check. This is actually the Violas. We give back $1 million each year. So $25,000 each game during a normal season to a local nonprofit that has a direct effect to the community. And that's, you know, money right out of the Violas pocket into an organization to try and help out in the local community. And then there's obviously follow-ups with those different entities, whether it's the Boys and Girls Club or the YMCA or, you know, JA, and really trying to stay with them and integrate the Panthers and see how we can help out with more than just a check presentation, but whether it's building a Boys and Girls Club, helping to build a house with our partner Moss, or there's a lot of things that we do to try and make sure that we're entwined in the community. And I think that the community has seen that we're not just words and that we're actions, and it's really paid off in spades.
And, you know, how is like the community involvement / integration into partnerships help open up doors like City Furniture with Andrew Koenig, for example?
Yeah. So that one, Andrew's a great guy, by the way. Amazing. That actually came James Conway, who's Andrew's cousin or nephew. I can't remember. He's my neighbor in Parkland. So he's their chief merchandising and marketing officer, I think is his title. We were having a conversation and we knew what integrations into the community and what things they like to align with. Military is a big one with them. We have, I would say, the most authentic military integration in the league, being that Vinny Viola, our owner, went to West Point, served Matt Caldwell, same thing, our chief operating, Sean McCaffrey, Keith Fine, who operates our practice facility, also West Point served. So we take a lot of pride in what our military hero program looks like, military appreciation looks like, and City saw that it was authentic and really wanted to be a part of that. So that's kind of how that came together. It was almost, I'm not going to say too easy, because you've been in this world, like partnerships take forever. This one went together very quickly because when we sat down, it was just authentic through and through on both sides.
Yeah, that's important. And talking about authentic, can you tell me between you and Matt Caldwell, who does more push-ups?
Matt does more push-ups because I do jiu-jitsu 3 days a week. So I think he does CrossFit and probably does push-ups every single day. I have not done a push-up competition against them, though I think he's challenged me. I'm afraid to lose in front of the staff, though. So I'm going to give Matt. Matt, he can do he's got more push-ups than me.
You know, how is the excitement of team performance helping you tell the story around the market?
Well, it's great because, to be completely honest, the last few years, you know, it was like this year is going to be our year. And then we kind of just didn't make it, or we just got in. This year is going to be our year. We lose the Islanders in the bubble in the first round. This year, it's come together. Bill Zito's done, not taking anything away from Dale. Dale's a good friend, but Bill Zito did an amazing job of bringing in some character guys that actually won in other organizations. And it kind of reminds me of 2015 or 14, I guess, when we brought in Willie Mitchell, myself, Derek McKenzie, UC Jokinen, Luongo just got back here and really reset the culture quickly inside the locker room. I feel like having Hornquist, Gudas, Verhage, guys that have won in different places coming in and setting the tone surrounding the core of guys that you just talked about with Barkey, Hubie, and them has really taken the team to another level. And on the business side, the proof is in the pudding, right? We've been talking about how good these guys are. We've been talking about how good this team can be, but you keep falling sort of short. Well, as of 2 days ago, we were the top team in all of the NHL. There's no, you can't say it's not working. So there's general excitement around the team, partnered with general excitement around the development and how we're going to be able to really use this as a, you know, we're going to have 3 to 4 different business entities within our organization now. And really being able to have those conversations is, I think, running parallel with those has been very exciting for everyone we're talking to.
And last thing before we go here, if you were to give advice to someone, you know, starting off on the business side early, young in their career, you know, just getting going at a young age, what advice would you give?
Listen, network. Gary said this to me, Gary Bettman said this to me, and it sounded so simple at the time, but it's true. You get out of it what you put into it, right? It's like anything else in life. If you show up and pack it in and just, you know, go through the motions, you'll stay at that level for the rest of your life. But if you really dive in, become passionate about it, this is, as you know, Brett, this is a lifestyle, not a job, right? Like there's no other real position in regular business where you're working 60, 70 hours a day, but you're enjoying it because you're at games, you're entertaining, you're talking to partners, you're looking at numbers, you're looking at brand stories, you're looking at reach, there's so many things. So as a young person, you know, listen, work as hard as you humanly can, embrace it, enjoy it. There's a lot of things that people do in life that they probably don't enjoy. My dad worked in a steel factory for 35 years. I don't think that was the most enjoyable experience. We're lucky to be in sports. So really embrace it. I think that'd be my advice. And lean on whatever network you can. Try and find mentors that have been in this space, that have been through it before, because everything you think as a young person, I mean, I came in this as an old person, but everything you think as a young person, somebody's probably already seen it before. So it's good to hear from them. And maybe you can limit some of your mistakes.
Well, I appreciate you coming to the program today and contributing. You know, it was great catching up and look forward to chatting with you soon.
Thanks, Brett.
Thanks for listening to the Sports Equity Podcast, where we discuss the value that sports brings to business. Follow us for new episodes on a weekly basis. See you next time.